On this episode of The Big Number, we dive into the stats to break down how the Denver Nuggets might fare without Nikola Jokic, following the news that he'll be sidelined for a minimum of 4 weeks with a knee injury, plus which players may find themselves on new teams in the new year. And if you haven't already, make a New Year's resolution to subscribe to our new Yahoo NBA YouTube channel. It's at Yahoo NBA. All of this coming up right now. Welcome, 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 welcome to the last big number of 2025. We're ringing in the new year, Dan. Dan, you're a man, our man. How are you, buddy?
I got really nervous for a second. You said the last big number, and I was like, and then you said of 2025, and I went, okay. Because, yeah. Listen, that is all the bad news I can take right now, because the NBA world dealt with some shaky business Monday night into Tuesday morning, which I think we're going to be getting into today. Tom, hit me with it. What is the final big number of 2025?
Dan, this week's big number is 4. That is the number of weeks that Nikola Jokic is going to miss with a knee injury, at minimum 4 weeks, according to the Denver Nuggets official feed. And in some circles and in some shades of light here, that this is actually a good thing. Considering what happened in Monday night's game against the Miami Heat, where Spencer Jones, his teammate, stepped on his foot and an awkward little hyperextension with the knee, and then he was writhing on the ground. Nikola Jokic, I think the fear was that he suffered serious ligament damage or an ACL injury or something that would knock him out for a considerable amount of time, potentially a season-ending injury. But no, the injury is of the hyperextension variety, which is actually a similar injury to what his teammate Cam Johnson had. He's out 4 to 6 weeks. And so I guess in a sense, this is good news that Nikola Jokic, while he is suffering a pretty serious knee injury here, knocking him out at least a month, it could be worse. And so, Dan, as you were watching the games last night and seeing this, probably you were in the same boat as I was thinking that this could have been a lot worse.
Right. It is important to start there. Like in the immediate moment of, you're thinking, is this it? Is this Jokic out for the season? Because we've seen guys go down looking like that, reaching for that knee, and usually very often bad news follows. So in the context of that kind of situation, a month could be worse, right? My second thought was, did this just hand Shai Gilgeous-Alexander his second straight MVP award? Nikola Jokic has not missed a game yet this season prior to suffering this injury. But you look at the Nuggets schedule, and they've got, I think, 17 or 18 games between now and the end of January. A month at minimum puts you through January 27th, January 29th, something like that. So if Jokic misses that whole stretch, and then even further on beyond that, you are talking about him running up against or over that 65-game threshold. Where you're not going to be able to be eligible for year-end awards after that. We've got somebody who has been out the first or second place finisher in MVP voting for 5 straight years, somebody who has been in first or second team all NBA for 7 straight years. So the idea of not having him back be able to be on the ballot is a gigantic issue for the Denver Nuggets and for the league at large, right? Do we now not? We're not going to have Jokic maybe at all at All-Star Weekend. Who knows? So these sort of like shorter term, more maybe smaller picture considerations that ran through my head. Then sort of zooming back from there. Oh, right. The Denver Nuggets are still going to have to play basketball games without Nikola Jokic for the next month. The Denver Nuggets team, who now is down 4 starters, right? You've got Aaron Gordon, who's out with his hamstring injury, hasn't played since, I believe, November 21st. Christian Brown, ankle sprain, hasn't played since November 12th. Cam Johnson, as you mentioned, hyperextended right knee of his own, likely to be out through the end of January as well, if not longer. And now Nikola Jokic. And so this is, we talked about Jamal Murray maybe making his first All-Star team. Jamal Murray is going to have to be an All-Star and then some for the next few weeks here to keep this thing afloat, because the Nuggets, we've viewed them as that is a, one of the premium contenders to the Oklahoma City Thunder, a team that can absolutely come out of the Western Conference and contend for an NBA championship. If the line between second place and pushing for first and falling down into fourth, fifth, you know, that lower reaches of the playoff spots. It's a pretty razor thin line, and you know, a really rough few weeks could have Denver needing to slug it out and really make up a lot of ground once they get the big fella back. So an awful lot went through my head in the moments after that injury last night. And I'm sure Denver Nuggets fans and the Denver Nuggets organization, not a whole lot of sleep last night as they pondered through all that as well.
Yeah, Dan, let's just start with the first thing you pointed out is the whole award thing. I hate the 65-game rule. I hate it. I think it's bad for the sport. I think it's bad marketing for the sport. It kind of puts it on the players that they don't want to play. The idea is like, hey, if you want to win awards, then you should play over 65 games. When this thing was already being part of the evaluation for voters is the games missed by these players. It's already baked into our awards, right? That we're considering, hey, if Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is playing 70 games and another guy's playing 64, do they deserve the MVP based on how many games they missed due to injury? It was already baked in. So it just felt like to me that this is an unnecessary threshold for the league to have a 65-game rule to be eligible for these all-league awards. If Jokic misses 18 games, thereby making 64 games and being disqualified from the votes, but Shai Gilgeous-Alexander misses 16 games and he's going to be right under that threshold, right over that threshold, is that two-game difference really what we're going to be doing here? Is like the difference between Shai Gilgeous-Alexander being an MVP and not is just he played two more games than Nikola Jokic. Let the voters decide that. We shouldn't have this part of the All League Awards. I think it needs to be pulled, first of all. Secondly, I think when you talk about the silver linings here, we don't know much about the injury itself other than it's being called a hyperextension, which is a description, not a diagnosis. I don't, for as of this recording, know if there's a bone bruise or any sort of ligament damage. I know that Shams Charania over at ESPN is reporting that all the tendons and ligaments are intact. I don't know how much information that's really giving us in terms of the issue here. I think that Nikola Jokic, by the standard of what we've seen with hyperextension type injuries, knee injuries, it's going to be about a month. And Brian Sutterer of he's been a great resource for a lot of sports injuries. He says expect 6 weeks, given that the four week timetable here of a reevaluation, according to the Denver Nuggets, a reevaluation in 4 weeks. Then you might have like a 1 to 2 week ramp up. And so as you see here, probably back post All-Star, because you have to remember here, the Denver Nuggets want to win a championship. And so are they going to, quote unquote, rush back Nikola Jokic ahead of the All-Star game, which is around the 6 week mark from today? So I think this is a silver lining in the sense that this is the easiest part of the schedule for the Denver Nuggets. I don't know if you've seen this, Dan, but I ran the numbers on the strength of schedule for the remaining games for the Denver Nuggets. And this is actually an 18-game sample going to the end of January. The 18-game sample from now to the end of January, if he misses a month thereabouts, the win percentage of the opponents is 434, which is the lowest rolling 18-game average, strength of schedule average for the rest of the season. There's not a lot of really tough games in there. Yes, there are some back-to-backs, but if you look at this schedule here, at Toronto, Cleveland, Brooklyn, Philly, Boston, Atlanta, Milwaukee, New Orleans, Dallas, Washington, Charlotte, Lakers, Washington, Milwaukee, Memphis, Detroit, Brooklyn, the Clippers at the end of the January, there's some games in there that on back-to-backs, it could be a tough one, especially if, you know, Giannis is playing and the health of the league stays intact. It could be a tough, you know, a couple games in here, but if there is a silver lining to this injury, A, it's that he's only going to miss, looks like, a month, right, instead of the rest of the season. B, the schedule is pretty soft. It's the softest by win percentage of the opponent for the Denver Nuggets. Later in this season, it'll get a lot tougher in the second half of the season for the Nuggets, and hopefully they'll have Jokic for that. And three, like you mentioned, I did the whole Charles Barkley, A, B, and then I went three. Third of all, Dan, Jamal Murray is going to make his first All-Star. I mean, this is a silver lining of silver linings that I don't think Jamal Murray wants to see Nikola Jokic out. But if he is out for the All-Star game, that opens up a spot potentially for Jamal Murray. And it also means that, you know, Jamal Murray is going to have a lot of opportunities, shot opportunities to boost some of his numbers and improve his, you know, his stock here to make his first All-Star season. So I think there's three things there. It's about a month, which is better than we thought it was. The All-Star for Jamal Murray is a nice thing for his teammate. And then it's a pretty easy stretch of the schedule. If there is such a thing for an NBA team, this is pretty even for the Denver Nuggets. And so, Dan, this is about as good news as you probably could get out of Denver on this Tuesday morning.
That's true. And now allow me to be the gray cloud inside of that silver lining. There's really not very much evidence that there are easy games for the Denver Nuggets when Nikola Jokic is not available, in part because he's just been available, right? Like from our pal Tom Ziller in his Good Morning It's Basketball newsletter this morning, Jokic has played in 93% of Denver's regular season games since joining the team in 2015. Devin Henderson in The Athletic noted that he has not missed more than five consecutive games since 2017-18. So like the Nuggets, everything is built around Nikola Jokic to a degree that, you know, maybe more than any other team is built around any one player. And when they have not had him available, it's been pretty dire straits. I just ran these numbers before we got on. Since the 2015-16 season, when Jokic came to the Nuggets, they've been outscored by 2,181 points in the minutes he hasn't been on the floor. So it sounds like a lot. It's because it is. That's a big number, 2,181. Yeah. And then that should just be the looking at this. Four was a nice one. Maybe not a round number, but a nice big one. Is certainly a big number for the Nuggets, looking at 4 weeks without Nikola Jokic. And then in the context of this season, there is literally no one player that swings the on-court, off-court stats of his team more than Jokic. From our friends at Cleaning the Glass, the Nuggets have been 20.5 points per 100 better with Jokic on the floor than off this season. Among players who have logged 400 plus minutes, that is the highest on-court, off-court differential. We've talked about this before, right? With Denver, the expectation is elite offense. Can you get good enough on defense, right? That is what Jokic bakes into who you are as a team. And with him off the floor, they are scoring at a rate that would fit in between the Nets and the Wizards, 26th, 27th. So, yes, yeah. the teams, the slate of games upcoming is not as fearsome as it could be. And there's going to be some opportunities for Jamal Murray to step to the forefront for some of the improved depth, which was part of the context for the Nuggets this season. Yeah, we move on from Michael Porter Jr., but we have now more guys. We are able to bring in Jonas Valanciunas. We're able to bring back Bruce Brown. We build out the depth. There's a better second unit. There's more options for us to be able to go to in the non-Jokic minutes. Now building the whole thing out of non-Jokic minutes, I think, is going to be an awfully tough puzzle for David Adelman to solve. And yeah, you are looking at, there's a three-game differential between third place and seventh place in the Western Conference right now. You are just hoping that you can stay, you know, above water. You can just keep your head afloat for the next few weeks. And then if Jokic is able to come back on the other side of the All-Star break, you make that second, later, that late season push, that closing kick that can then put the Nuggets back into the position that we all expected them to be in. This is the sort of thing that can derail a season. The hope that what's on Jamal Murray and David Adelman and everybody's shoulders right now is making sure they stay steady enough so that when the big guy comes back, there's still something to play for.
Yeah, over the last eight seasons, to piggyback the numbers that you just gave me, that is crazy. Minus 2,000. That's nuts. He's missed 38 games over his last eight seasons, and that span is encompassing like when he first became All-NBA, All-Star talent. That 38-game sample, which, by the way, such a small number, is just 38 games that he's missed over eight seasons, just underlining the fact that Nikola Jokic has just been a mainstay. He didn't miss a game for two straight seasons in there. So we don't really know what this is going to be like. Like you mentioned, only five games consecutive that he's missed is the longest stretch that he's ever missed in the NBA. But in this 38-game sample, Dan, the Nuggets are 14-24, a win percentage of 368. That is the equivalent of a 30-win team. And I will just add, that's probably a lot of games with Aaron Gordon and Christian Brown, right? That's a lot of games with their third, fourth, fifth best player, and they're not going to have that with Cam Johnson and Christian Brown and Aaron Gordon out for the foreseeable future. And hopefully they get back soon. But this is, I know that we're spinning this as good news, you know, that he's only missing a month, but it is devastating news for the Denver Nuggets, right? Like, we could just say that. It is devastating news for the Denver Nuggets, and hopefully he gets back in short order on the early side of that four-week timeline. But I could see Denver having to play in the play-in because of this injury, and it just it's a bad set of circumstances for the Denver Nuggets that they've had this kind of snowball effect of injuries. And we just hope that Jamal Murray stays healthy, because without him, that 30-win pace team without Nikola Jokic could be, you know, 15-20 if there's no Jamal Murray.
Yeah, I mean, it's good news for them this morning, this afternoon rather, we're talking about, you know, the Spurs looking to get, sort of cement their hold on the number two spot in the West. You're looking at, you know, the teams right below Denver, you know, Houston, the Lakers, the Wolves, like maybe even the Phoenix Suns, who would have seen the possibility of them being able to push for a 5-6 seed before the start of the season. But the teams that are in that mix right below the 2-3 spots, this is an opportunity to seize and like lay claim to a home court advantage spot in the Western Conference playoffs, which, given the strength of what's below that, what, you know, in that middle class, and then the possibility of, yeah, as you mentioned, if the Denver Nuggets drop into the play-in, how excited do you think you would be to deal with a play-in Jokic, right? Like, yo, coming out of there, if you are a 1-2 seed and then all of a sudden you're talking about a 7 or 8 seed coming out with Jokic fully healthy, that's an awfully difficult set of circumstances. But yeah, it is the kind of thing that just throws the entire conference into upheaval. And there's a lot more questions that are going to need to be answered between now and the end of January. And here's hoping that Jamal Murray and company have some answers for him.
Yeah. Just before we move on, I just want to reiterate this 65 game rule. We need to get rid of it, because if we're looking at a situation where we're going to have no Wemby, Giannis, or Jokic in all league awards at the end of the year, if they miss like 18 games, I just think this is the state of the NBA, is that you're going to have guys who are immensely valuable and perhaps the best players who bake in 15-20 games lost due to injury. And I don't think they should be penalized for that. Should Jokic be penalized for having a guy roll into his ankle in the middle of the game? I think it's just something we got to get rid of. It was well-intentioned to try to motivate players to play more, but it implies that they don't want to play 65 games. It implies that that they're just taking games off, and I just think it's a bad look. So let's get rid of that. Let's get Jokic back. Let's get Cam Johnson and Aaron Gordon and Christian Brown back so we can actually evaluate this Denver Nuggets team as a title contender and be in the mix as they deserve to be. But this is a new year, and we are going to see a new Denver Nuggets team, and we're going to go through a list of new year, new team scenarios with the rest of the league here for the rest of the show. We got some news on Nikola Jokic this morning, so we kind of we're going to now talk about some of these maybe changes of scenery or new scenarios for the new year in 2026. But before we do that, I want to mention, Dan, remind the audience that if you're watching this on YouTube, you can get this and all of our NBA content at our new Yahoo NBA channel, which is Yahoo NBA on YouTube. Please subscribe to that so you can catch this show, the KOC show, and of course the Dunker Spot all in one place. So it's Yahoo NBA YouTube channel. Go subscribe, leave us a note in the comments, and we would greatly appreciate that. And we're going to go with three little numbers from Dan right after this. All right, Dan, this week's big number is 4, the minimum number of weeks that Nikola Jokic is out with his knee injury. Hope that he is back within 4. That'd be great. Hopefully it's not too much longer. But we have the rest of the league to talk about here beyond Nikola Jokic, and we're going to do new team, new year. What is the first little number that you got for me, Dan?
Yeah, from one injured all-world big man to another, first little number is 1.5, as in plus 1.5 in estimated plus minus, the widely respected all-in-one metric from our pals at dunksandthrees.com. There's 8 players in the NBA who are plus 1.5 on both sides of the ball, offensive estimated plus minus and defensive estimated plus minus. You've got SGA, Giannis, Wemby, Karl-Anthony Towns, Derek White, Jalen Suggs, Chet Holmgren, and Anthony Davis. I feel pretty confident saying most of those dudes are going to stay on their team in the new year. They're not finding a new team, I guess, unless they're traded for one another. You know, the Cat Giannis discussion happened. AD, however, a lot of smoke around where he could wind up going. Chris Haynes recently reported the Hawks have been kind of heavy in the interest for AD, that it wouldn't involve Trae Young, who we'll get to Trae Young in a little bit. There's been some rumbling about the Warriors, who've been maybe into the idea of adding AD since like 2017 or 18, and, you know, varying reports about how into it they are right now. The sticking point, though, is AD is that level of dude, that good on two-way impact on both ends of the floor. Just under 21 points, 11 rebounds, 3 assists, and 3 stocks in 30 minutes per game this season. Huge impact. He has also played in only 16 of Dallas's 33 games and is out again right now with the groin injury that he picked up on Christmas. Oh, and he's also owed $58.5 million for next season and has a $62.8 million player option for the year after that. So what do you think, Tom? New team, new year. It makes all the sense in the world for the Mavericks to want to move on from AD and build the whole ship around Cooper Flagg. But given what we know about the health and the money and everything else, do you think the plus 1.5, the two-way impact is going to entice teams, or is the health and the fattening medical file and the giant bag he's owed for the next 2 years going to scare teams off from finding Anthony Davis a new team in this new year?
I would not be wanting to hold the bag there. I would not want to trade for Anthony Davis at that number, Dan. I feel like to me, this is Paul George 2.0. You know, you acquire a guy who, yes, on paper, he's a great two-way superstar, but the problem is that paper is paper thin. You know, it's paper mache. It's not very durable. And the problem with Anthony Davis is he just isn't available enough for me to put in all of those assets into a trade. Also, you have to pay him for 2+ seasons after that. So it's like, I like the idea of Anthony Davis, but at this age and at this stage of his career, I wouldn't put in multiple first round picks. I wouldn't put in a first round pick if it is going to be Zachary Risacher going in that trade to Dallas and then cap filler to get to the Anthony Davis number. I'm okay with the players going over there. I'm not okay with throwing in multiple top shelf assets for the chance to pay Anthony Davis in his mid-30s going into these huge contract numbers. Anthony Davis to me feels like what the Philadelphia 76ers did with Paul George, where it's like, yeah, he was recently All-NBA and Defensive Player of the Year candidate, but I just don't see him being durable enough for me to put all those assets in. So I know Atlanta and their front office has been very aggressive and making splash moves. DeJounte Murray comes to mind. But I do think that when you're the Atlanta Hawks, I would be very reticent to put in any sort of like unprotected first-round picks or even that one from the New Orleans Pelicans / Milwaukee Bucks pick. I would not put that into an Anthony Davis deal, especially, I don't know, man. Like, when you got Trae Young, I guess you have like this idea of this is our last gasp with Trae Young. You pair him with a lob threat in Anthony Davis. Maybe you see this through and then reevaluate this summer. But to me, I would stay away from Anthony Davis, which is another reason why the Luka Doncic trade was an absolute disaster. It's because we knew that he was injury prone or injury riddled going into that trade. He was injured at the time of the trade. And now we're talking about maybe he's going to be traded again. I wouldn't be wanting to be the one acquiring Anthony Davis at this stage.
Yeah, the only reason I would like to see it happen is the eventual, like, after the fact TikTok of how the deal went down. Like, you know, there are many wonderful inside reporters that write these sorts of stories, because I want to find out what the negotiation is on who gets the pick. You know, if it's like, yeah, we know what the Hawks definitely don't want to put in the Pelicans pick, that juicy pick they got over the summer. But I can imagine the Hawks front office being like, I mean, let's just say you guys should give us a pick for taking on the money. Like, you know, let's see what would happen. Let's see if we say that on the phone call, what happens? Do they hang up? Do they keep them on the line because they know they don't have suitors? That's the kind of stuff that I want to learn. So we'll see about that. But number two in our little numbers this week is 13. Lucky number 13. That's how many NBA players this season are averaging at least 25 points per game on 600 true shooting, according to stathead.com. It's a list full of MVPs, full of multi-time All-NBA selections, includes one former All-Star in Lauri Markkanen. It also includes Michael Porter Jr. After being shipped from these Denver Nuggets to the Brooklyn Nets in the offseason, he is performing at an All-Star level himself. elite scoring efficiency despite shouldering the largest offensive workload of his career. 81% at the rim, 40% on from three-point land on more than 9 attempts per game, highest free throw attempt rate, highest assist rate of his career. This is a 6'10" sharpshooter, a bona fide scorer, a plus rebounder. By the way, the Nets have been an elite defense over the last month with him playing big minutes in it. So he's somebody who has been, he's been in a smaller role on a title contender. He's been now in a bigger role on a team that is winning with its defense, and he's shouldering the scoring load for them. He has one more year on his deal left after the season. He's owed $40.8 million for 2026-27. So it's like, it's not nothing if you go and you get him, but you also have him for another year after this. If you're one of the many teams that's looking for like another shooter, front court scoring, size, like the teams that we've all heard about with Lauri Markkanen, right? Like your Detroits, your San Antonios, your whomevers. Why wouldn't you instead maybe want to give the Brooklyn Nets a call and see if they'd be willing to listen to a pitch on Michael Porter Jr.? Because just based on the numbers and where the productions are this season, he's maybe been at least as good as Lauri Markkanen, if not a little better.
I got to say, Sean Marks, excellent job getting a 2032 first round pick and this dude in that trade for Cam Johnson, who has had a really rough year. Of course, we mentioned that he's injured now, but he's had a really down year for the Denver Nuggets, you know, next to Jokic. I thought his numbers would get way better. And in fact, the opposite has happened. Not only has Cam Johnson's numbers gotten worse, but over there in Brooklyn, he's putting up an all-star season, Michael Porter Jr. And he is going to potentially get a first-round pick or multiple first-round picks or those type of assets if he is going to be moved at the deadline here. And I think it's a reasonable expectation to believe that that is going to happen, that Michael Porter Jr. Will be a sell high candidate here at the deadline for a team like the Golden State Warriors. Or look, man, a lot of teams are going to want a sharpshooter who can do multiple things out on the floor, which is the reason why they were an NBA champion a couple years back with the Denver Nuggets. He is a guy that needs high level defenders around him to make up for some of his shortcomings. But the dude is a hooper. Like, he's proven in Brooklyn that he is not just a role player who cuts off the ball and plays off of a hub like Nikola Jokic. He's a legit all-star out there, and he's playing at that level. So Sean Marks, just great piece of deal-making at the time. I feel like it was widely considered a win for the Denver Nuggets and maybe kind of a, I guess you get Michael Porter Jr. and kind of see and roll the dice on this guy, but he has absolutely blossomed in Brooklyn. A tree grows in Brooklyn, I guess you could say, where he's a Michael Porter Jr. He's a great guy for an opposing team to say, look, we need some help at the deadline. And I think they're going to just add some more assets. And that might be what Sean Marks is doing here, is like, if you come to Brooklyn, we will rehab your trade stock. We'll boost your value around the league. And if you want to be an all-star, we got this evidence here of Michael Porter Jr. doing it. So there is one way to boost your assets in the NBA, and the Brooklyn Nets need to have some sort of silver lining here on another rebuilding season. But this is a great story, and Michael Porter Jr. is definitely, in my opinion, going to have a new team in the year 2026, and I don't think it's going to be Brooklyn anymore.
Yeah, I mean, and all credit to them. I hand up accountability. I was one of the people that was like, this is going to be a sideshow. Like, yeah, Michael Porter Jr. is going to get to shoot a million times, and we'll see what that turns into. And what it's turned into is legitimate. It's not just empty calories buckets, right? It's like legitimate, helpful balancing out of a team while also contributing in the structure and the culture of what Jordy Fernandez and those guys are putting together there. So I think that only it elevates what Michael Porter Jr. might be able to fetch on the open market. And then, yeah, all of a sudden you're talking about multiple first round picks. That would be an awfully nice haul for the Nets. Also, if they wind up getting worse this summer or down the balance of the season, it wouldn't be the worst thing for them ahead of the upcoming draft. Third and final little number this week, 10, as in 10 three-point attempts per 100 possessions. Going back to 2020, there are only 9 players who've played more than 5,000 minutes who have launched 10 triples per 100 and hit them at a 40%+ clip. Not very many guys that love that volume, that efficiency. MPJ is one of them. Steph Curry, Kyrie Irving, some of your other designated shooter types, your Sam Hausers, George Niang. Also on that list is Zach LaVine, who by all accounts is super available in Sacramento as the Kings continue to slum it down around the bottom of the Western Conference standings. We know the Bucks have done their due diligence on Zach LaVine. I believe the last count was Sam Amick, Jake Fisher, Chris Haynes, and Jamal Collier have all reported that they've done work on Zach LaVine, seeing what his those dots could connect. And we know that the way that Doc Rivers wants to play with this Bucks team, the way that John Horst put it together, is spread it out around Giannis, shooters all over the place. They are, I believe, 10th in the share of their shot attempts that come from three-point land. So having a high-volume, high-efficiency shooter who also can get downhill, get to the rim, and is just like a three-level scorer would seem like a really good fit. We saw the way that their offense just died when Giannis was not available. Could certainly use another piece there. We also know that Zach LaVine's teams have struggled to win his minutes for like most of his career. It took the Bulls a long time to find a suitor for him that landed him in Sacramento, and that he's also got a $49 million player option for next season. So that might scare some suitors off, but it certainly feels like he's in the window available. Like, hey, does anybody want to come shop for our friend Zach LaVine? The Bucks, it seems like, maybe want to go in the store and make a deal. What do you think? Do you think Zach LaVine finds a new team in this new year?
I think he does. Would I do it if I'm the Milwaukee Bucks? It depends on what's going back into the trade, but I'll just point out that Zach LaVine has made his team worse by being on the floor in 10 out of 12 seasons in his career. So yes, three-pointer numbers, and of course, high volume, high efficiency, but defensive question marks all over his career. But you pair him with Giannis, that is a guy that can erase a lot of the issues that gets exposed when you play next to Domantas Sabonis in Sacramento, as opposed to Giannis Antetokounmpo can clean up a lot of those issues on the back line. So I feel like Zach LaVine, if he is going to succeed, that does give him a little bit of a chance there in Milwaukee. At that contract, at that age, and his injury history as of late, he hasn't been the most durable player over the last few years. I do have questions about that, but the Milwaukee Bucks are kind of they're not in a position of leverage here. And I think the Sacramento Kings and the Milwaukee Bucks would be an amazing kind of trade call, because they both have to not have the appearance of desperation, but they both know that they're quite under the gun. Both of them, both franchises have a lot on the line here with Sacramento trying to rebuild again and try to figure out how they get anything of value on this roster with Domantas Sabonis out and Zach LaVine has been out. I do think that Milwaukee makes some sense, but again, if you're talking empty calories, it has been a tough label to shed for Zach LaVine, that he is not the guy who's able to do it on both ends of the floor to get you into the playoffs and carry a team. And if that is your expectation, that like he's not that guy, how much are you going to be willing to put into a deal? And the Bucks just don't have a lot of trade assets to begin with. So I don't know what the deal looks like exactly, but if you're Milwaukee, having Giannis is a great guy to trade some of these Zach LaVine types with, because he is a guy that can cover up for a lot of the issues and deficiencies of a guy like Zach LaVine.
Yeah, just getting to the money, you're probably looking at something like Kyle Kuzma, Bobby Portis, and a minimum salary to get to the Zach LaVine's number. And then from there, it's like, if you're Sacramento, or if you're Milwaukee, can you expand that a little bit, like get another useful piece back, you know, whether that's another front court player or, you know, I don't know, maybe a Keon Ellis that everybody in the NBA watching world seems to think is awesome, but the Kings never seem to want to play. Can you involve him in that kind of deal? And then again, another one of those weird, who gets the pick? What kind of pick compensation are we talking about if we're talking about taking on longer term money and yada, yada, yada? So it's not, I think what we're seeing as we go through these new team, new year kind of situations is, if you are a high priced, you know, maybe high statistical production, but like either lower efficiency or not two-way impact player, it's not always easy. And it's increasingly difficult now in the apron eras to like make those deals work. Those sub superstar, but high dollar figure deals can be really damaging to your team construction and can be really difficult to fit in and really difficult to move. as you work through your apron issues, the other team's apron issues, who can take more back than they send out, who's restricted from sending out X, Y, or Z things, what kind of pick, hole are you in terms of how much you've sent out over the years, what can you swap, all those sorts of considerations. It makes making some of these deals a lot harder, and which, like, it makes you wonder if a lot of these guys that seem like ideal candidates to find a new team in the new year might wind up staying pat more than we would like to imagine, as we hope for like a pretty exciting deadline. Maybe it might be a little bit quieter because some of these deals are just harder to make.
Yeah, this is a good segue here because we're going to talk about maybe the most polarizing player in the league, and Trae Young, who was at, can't believe this. He was an all-star last year. It feels like it was like a few years that he's been an all-star, but no, just last year he was an all-star. We're going to talk a little bit of a deep dive here on Trae Young and what the Atlanta Hawks are going to do now after their recent skid. Trae Young is going to be the focus of our next segment here on The Big Number right when we come back. All right, Dan. So, like, the big number is four with Nikola Jokic and the minimum number of weeks that he's out with this knee injury. But it originally, in the original draft of this episode, it was going to be 126.2. And you're wondering, what is that? And I have the answer for you. That is the on-court defensive rating for the Atlanta Hawks when Trae Young is on the floor. They've given up 126.2 points every 100 possessions with Trae Young on the floor, and that is the worst for any player player team combo this season. And considering that they were playing at basically historic levels of offensive efficiency, yeah, you guessed it, that is the worst on-court defensive rating for any player team combo in NBA history for someone who's played over 200 minutes. Dude, 126. And here's the only block he's had this season. Cam Thomas driving down the floor and Trae Young kind of swipes at him. And that's his only block. Okay.
Well,
so it is technically a block, Dan. And Cam Thomas, you know, trying to make a layup. So I guess you could call that a block, but Trae Young is the arguably the worst defender in the NBA. Someone who has to be hid routinely. If you look at the guys that he's guarded in NBA matchup data, he's often just standing off in the corner, just hiding, hopefully not getting put in any too many actions. But when you got Dyson Daniels and you still are having a porous defense of 126 points every 100 possessions, I don't know what team is looking at this Trae Young player at this point in his career and saying, yeah, that we can make that work defensively. It's tough. I mean, the Hawks right now, they're in a really bad slide in the season, and I think a lot of people were high on them coming into this year, and rightfully so. Just on paper, it seems like a lot of these pieces do fit, but it's been a mess. Trae Young right now, he's been out. He's only played 10 games. In one of those games, he played less than 20 minutes. In the games that he's played 20 minutes, the Hawks are 1-8 with Trae Young. Dan, not great, Bob. Trae Young this season, and I feel like the Atlanta Hawks are going to be, you know, trying to mix up this team, trying to shake this up. But when you got a guy like Trae Young who's so tough to hide defensively, as Jalen Brunson cooks him on this one-on-one play, there's so many of these, dude, where he's just like a matador out there and then just gives up on the play. And oftentimes he just stands there and doesn't go in for rebounds. He doesn't go and rotate over. And I just, part of this 126 figure, Dan, seems like to me, is that the team is checked out. The team is like, if Trae Young is out here, I can't possibly put out this many fires defensively. And so I just feel like Trae Young right now, even though he's an all-star, a reigning all-star, I feel like it's going to be tough to move this guy.
We've seen so often that one of the roster building, like team building challenges that a lot of organizations face, and it is part of draft evaluation, it's part of free agency and trade talks like this one. If you are building around a small guard, you got to really nail everything around that small guard, right? And that small guard has to be an absolute lights out, no doubt about it, all NBA caliber offensive engine to make it worth your while. And so like Steph Curry also is, you know, bigger and a better participant in the team defensive structure and in Golden State and has been for years. Jalen Brunson is arguably as damaging a defender as Trae Young on a lot of nights, but his level of offensive contributions has increased, has like,
at least he takes charges, right? He'll put his body on the line to like make plays defensively, whereas Trae Young does everything in his power to stay out of the play, it seems like.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like, we'll execute the scheme, if nothing else. We're going to high hedge to try to turn the guy back into the defender we're trying to get the switch. Like, make it work as best you can. So if you are, like, in order for all this to work, it needs to be, like, not the worst defense in the NBA, and you need to be able to elevate that offense to a top five level. And that was the math earlier on in Trae Young's career, right? Like, we remember that conference finals run. That Hawks team was, like, top five offense, around league average defense, similar sort of build to what they've tried to do now, where you had this, you know, size at the rim, you had size on the wing, you had, I don't know, Kevin Huerter as like a big two playing next to him. You know, there was, you know, John Collins and DeAndre Hunter. They were size kind of everywhere on that roster, insulating him. And that was the theory of the case with this Hawks team, where you're going to have Dyson Daniels next to him. You're going to have Jalen Johnson. You're going to bring in Nikhil Alexander-Walker. You have Onyeka Okongwu there. When Kristaps Porzingis is there, you have another rim protector. So there's size all over the place. And Kristaps Porzingis has missed a lot of time, which is, I think, just about pretty much anybody could have seen, or at least it's certainly not outside the realm of possibility that he would miss a lot of time. His, you know, recurring illness issues, which is a, you know, concerning thing in its own right, but he just hasn't been available, right? And so you're already down the 7'3" rim protector. And it's the comparison I made last year when in like making the argument for like all defensive case for Dyson Daniels is he's like swinging a weighted bat. Like it is harder for him to be able to get the bat off his shoulder and make contact because Trae Young weighs it down. And so none of that it takes away from Trae Young as, you know, Trae Young's floor vision, Trae Young's ability to dissect the defense, a defense in the pick and roll. But if he's also not able to shoot the ball super efficiently, which he has not, he takes a lot of super deep threes. He doesn't make a lot of super deep threes. And so if he's not contributing with the offense efficiency in that way, the Hawks have been an average offense, you know, not elite in his minutes, and they're dropping down all the way defensively. It makes him a very, as you mentioned, a tricky player to fit into another team's, not even roster structure, I mean, or salary structure, we'll get to that, but just what that team needs to look like around him. There aren't a lot of teams that need point guards. You know, we had one of the big sort of connect the dots parlor games a couple of years ago was, does he fit next to Wemby in San Antonio?
Yeah.
They're all good on guards right now. You know, they found one in trade. They drafted two of them and they're good. They're all set right now.
They're set.
And, you know, Orlando, we had talked about that, right? They go and they make their big move for Desmond Bane. They don't seem like they want to move in the direction of a ball dominant point guard. They want to sort of get their shot creation elsewhere. Hasn't worked out super great for Orlando, by the way, but neither here nor there. So you're in the situation of where are the lily pads to jump to? Where are the suitors excited about it, about just getting him into the team, let alone at the financial situation, which we heading into the season, we knew Trae Young was looking for an extension. The Hawks didn't do it. And there, you know, by all accounts, hasn't been a whole lot of movement in that direction this season. And now you're at, the team is not good. The team has been dramatically worse in your minutes. And what's the argument for an extension now beyond he's popular with our fan base, which is not nothing. That's like, that's real. He's what, the best Hawk since, I'm going to say since Joe Johnson. It's easy to say Dominique Wilkins. Let's put some respect on Joe Johnson's name here, though, by the way, 7-time All-Star, lest we forget. But, you know, a relative rarity to have a superstar, a star caliber player in Atlanta. He's been that. He's been the standard bearer for them. But standard bearer will kind of lead you to where? And so, yeah, all that to say, whoever trades for Trae would be on the hook for whatever the next deal is. Good luck figuring out what the right dollar sign is for that, right? What the figure is there. Because the Hawks weren't eager to go even on a sub-max contract multiple years, it seems like. Because you figure if there was a big number for him out there, it would have gotten done, and it didn't. And so now I don't know. Yeah. I mean, you know, we talk about new year, new team, people that seem like they're in the market for a new situation. That feels like we're at with Trae Young. I don't know where the new situation is.
Well, the Spurs, I always liked the idea of he and Wemby playing together, because if there's one eraser that you could pair with, sure, Trae Young, it is Victor Wembanyama, the 7'7" dude who just swats everything in sight and just scares the bejesus out of everybody. That would seem like a great pairing, but of course they already have De'Aaron Fox, Stephon Castle, and Dylan Harper already over there, so cross them off the list. Would the Miami Heat entice a deal for Trae Young? I don't think so, given that they just completely renovated this and overhauled this offense to be kind of anti-Trae Young, in the sense you're not going to have a guy who has the ball in his hands nonstop, who doesn't really like to play off the ball. He's 6 of 13 this year. It sounds great that he's 46% shooting, Trae Young, on catch and shoot threes this year, but just one per game that he's catching off the pass.
Yeah.
This is a guy who just doesn't want to be the Steph Curry type of running off the ball. He wants the ball in his hands. And I can understand that when you got a really great passer in Trae Young, that you want the ball in his hands. But the problem is, he's not a great shooter. He's an okay shooter. And coming into the league kind of as this like next Steph Curry ideal, he hasn't been that. And he's been a very overrated shooter in the NBA. And this year, shooting 30% from downtown. So if you're acquiring this dude, you got to kind of acknowledge that he's going to be someone who doesn't want to play off the ball and move around on the offense. And Eric Spoelstra, given the offense that they're doing right now and executing, he doesn't seem like a good fit there. And I know they're always going big game hunting in Miami trying to get a star player, but that doesn't seem right. The Timberwolves seem like on paper they might be a good fit. But then you look at the contracts, and who are you going to put into the deal to get to his number of 40 plus million dollars? The contracts just don't work. If you're going to acquire Trae Young, you better have Rudy Gobert on the team. And that's pretty much, along with Julius Randle, the only option to trade on your cap sheet. So I don't see how the Timberwolves would go after Trae Young. And after that, I'll just say it. I think we're entering the territory of that the Atlanta Hawks will seriously consider waiving him, because I don't see how you can trade him. And you have an opportunity here to build around Jalen Johnson and see a scenario in which Trae Young, if they don't find a suitor and the defense is this bad, I kind of see a scenario in which they might just like, all right, Bradley Beal, it happened to Bradley Beal. The Milwaukee Bucks did it with Damian Lillard. Kind of feel like we might be at a situation, an impasse, where they just might cut bait. And that would mean they have to basically stretch his remaining salary, the two remaining years, this year and next, the player option that he has for next season. Dan, I might be crazy, but I kind of feel like the Hawks, if they don't find a suitor for Trae Young, I don't think they let this go into next season, because he's going to pick up that player option. I can almost guarantee that. And I just don't see that the Hawks are going to really want to keep this going. The season is going down the tubes. And with Trae Young being 1-8, it's very clear that he is not a winning player in this organization right now. And I think it's a possibility. I'm not saying it's likely, but I think it's a possibility that we have a Bradley Beal or Damian Lillard situation where they just say, we're done with this, and we're going to stretch his contract over the next few years.
Yeah, we have to remember, my first reaction to that idea, I don't know if you can see, just my eyes popping out of my head, but my first reaction to it was just like, it's insane to do that. But I'm maybe still operating with a set of priors of like, you wouldn't stretch that big of a number, right? Like next year, I think it's a $49 million player option for next year. Like that's just, it's so much money to eat for no tangible benefit. The counter argument, I suppose, would be the tangible benefit you get is you just get out of the Trae Young business. And so yes, then you no longer have to make the decision on what is the right number? What is the best way to build around him? Can Trae Young be more complimentary if our vision of what our future is looks a lot more like Jalen Johnson, big athletic wings everywhere, you know, complimentary sort of like ball handling and playmaking by committee rather than the one guy. And so like you have erased the chalkboard of those questions and you no longer have to answer them. And that would be worth, you know, and the stretch provision, the way it works for our listeners that might not know, in the collective bargaining agreement, you are able to get rid of a salary on your contract, on your books, by breaking it up for 2 times the remaining length of the deal plus 1 year. So with Trae Young, if they did it after, you know, did it for the next year, he's got 1 full year left. So you'd be doing it over 3 seasons, you know, 2 times 1 plus 1. And so then it's whatever that remaining salary is. So if it's $49 million, like a 16 and change, whatever, $16.3 million roster, like dead money on your books for 3 years. So that's an impediment to team building. I think that's the idea of, like, you maybe shouldn't necessarily want to do this because you can't, like, it's not like you can trade that dead money. It just sits there and then you have less money to spend on your salary cap. But maybe if the argument from that, for that perspective from the Hawks is like, that's less of an impediment than Trae Young, even at a sub max number, when we don't feel like we can field a winning roster with him at the heart of it, which is an awfully harsh evaluation to arrive at for a player who has, you know, made all-star teams, been in the all-NBA conversation, been part of the heights of the last handful of years in Atlanta when they did make it to the conference finals. It's just, that's a long time ago now, and we haven't seen a whole lot of evidence that this team with Trae Young at the heart of it can be better than a play-in team since then. And so, yeah, as my immediate reaction is like, well, that's an unthinkable spot to arrive at. But in this new NBA, under the new collective bargaining agreement, with the apron set up the way that it is, with the salaries skyrocketing the way they are, maybe it's no longer as unthinkable as I'm thinking it is.
Yeah, I think once Luka Doncic gets traded for Anthony Davis at the deadline, the unthinkable
all bets
is not,
are off.
Yeah, all bets right. are off. I mean, we would have thought that waiving Bradley Beal with his no trade clause, you would find ways to figure out a deal there. But no, they decided to waive him. And we all thought it was insane to think that the Milwaukee Bucks would ever consider waiving Damian Lillard, even after the Achilles tear. That was such a surprise. And here you have a situation where I feel like the Atlanta Hawks have floated him or tried to move him or figure out a way to find a suitor for Trae Young for a while now, it seems like. But you know what's also absurd is 126. Like that is such an alarming figure that a team that has Dyson Daniels on it and like other good defenders have been just hemorrhaging that kind of number of points, 126 points every 100. It's absurd. Another stat here on Trae Young's defense, even though he's been hit on guys like Isaac Okoro or just basically like role players, he has allowed 54 of 100 field goal attempts when he is the defender. And a lot of those are three-pointers. The effective field goal percentage on Trae Young's opponent is 62%, which is also the effective field goal percentage of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. So even when he's being hit on all of these role players, they're scoring at a rate that is equivalent to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the reigning MVP and presumptive MVP now that Nikola Jokic is out. So, dude, this is – I know it sounds absurd on its surface, but the Trae Young – I don't know if you call it an experiment at this point, but they're trying so hard to hide him defensively and they just can't do it. And so I don't know. We'll see what happens with Trae Young. I guess, is it the Kings? Is that the only, like, and all of these scenarios when you're like, which team would take on this huge risk and question mark? You kind of end up at the Sacramento Kings eventually. Don't you, Dan?
They could use a point guard. Right. I mean, we've established that, you know, they maybe this next point guard is the one that gets them where they want to go. But yeah, what a mess. What a mess
Trae
all
Young.
Around. Yeah.
Let's do it. Get it done.
Yep. You know? Swap them around. Yeah. It's all. And there is a point where you're like, is it just everybody looking around and going like my problem for your problem? I don't know. Like the best that we can sort of figure out. It might not. I'm sure everybody's sort of like grinding their teeth and holding their nose and making those calls. But that might be what where we wind up. Some of these deals that were like signed on the old system and cycled onto the new system are a little bit tougher to figure out the landing spots for, especially when the players aren't playing up to the money or not being able to be on the court. So yeah, interesting times and maybe some weird ones ahead as we get into the new year.
Yeah. It's going to be an interesting trade deadline, which is only about a month away. So we're coming
Wild.
Into the new year and the trade deadline's almost here. So lots of action in the new year. Hope that Nikola Jokic is back soon, and the Denver Nuggets don't slide too much because of that unfortunate injury. But lots of news to come here in the opening weeks of 2026. Dan, you have a wonderful New Year's. I hope you have a happy and safe New Year's. I've got the Blazers game, 8 o'clock Eastern start right before the New Year's. So really fun times over here at the Haberstroh household. So that'll be fun. OKC, no, what better way to ring in the new year than have to go to OKC and play that team? So I'll be on that broadcast, which is, it'll be interesting. Hey, Blazers have beat them before. Why not again? But yeah, have a wonderful, happy new year. And to all the team behind the scenes, Emmy, Sarah, Ryan, thanks so much for making the show a reality. And we're really looking forward to 2026. Thank you so much. Please subscribe on YouTube, on the YouTube channel, Yahoo NBA, and go subscribe and rate us 5 stars wherever you listen to this podcast. We'll be back next year. See you next year, Dan.
See you next year,
when I was
Tom.
A kid. See you next year. And we'll until then, be safe, have a good time, and Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year, everybody.